Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we will continue our ongoing theme looking at critical media literacy education, and building public trust in news sources. On today's program, I turn the tables on our co-host, Chase Palmieri, as I interview him for the hour about his latest startup endeavor on crowd-contested media, Credder.com. Stay with us.
Created by the criminal minds, political ties, habitual eyes, alibis, disguise, another guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous.
Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we welcome back Chase Palmieri. Of course, listeners to the show for the past year know Chase as being a co-host of our show. But we have a history together and a shared interest in critical media literacy, education, and building trust in news sources. So Chase Palmieri was the founder of an organization called Pryworthy.com that was based on a concept of crowd-contested media, and we're going to get into that conversation today. But Chase and his team have created a new startup. It's called Credder.com, C-R-E-D-D-E-R.com. And Chase Palmieri has a degree in business,
entrepreneurship, and small business management. From CSU Chico.
From Chico State in Northern California. You're also a restaurateur, so a business person, right?
Yep, 13 years, Michelin guide, 12 years in a row with Reezy Beezy here in Petaluma.
And, of course, the reason that you and I know each other and have crossed paths is because you are, for lack of a better term, we could say that you're a news junkie.
Yes,
like to consume the printed word in journalism, and you think that we're having... You think that we're really at a crossroads in journalism in the United States, and that we've really been confronted with a crisis a long time in the making, one that involves the erosion of public trust in institutions, and one of the major protected by the First Amendment is the so-called free press. And so at Project Censored, our major concern, of course, has been upholding a very independent and vigorous and vigilant free press, calling out those in power, holding those in power accountable, trying to inform the public about the things that are going on in society, not fallacious propaganda or not engaging in censorship. And you and your team of people now at Credder.com have been working for close to 3 years, right, in different iterations, about tackling problems of trust in media. So why don't we just start by talking a little bit about that issue, about the declining trust in media. Of course, the 2016 election brought with it the cries of fake news that were quickly off-leash and used to just weaponize that term and use it against anybody where someone disagrees. And of course, Donald Trump has taken to using the term frequently, calling the press the enemy of the people, and organizations, institutions, or journalists with whom he disagrees. He calls them fake news. And then, of course, there has been an outcry, not just in the public, but also in our institutions, including in journalism, to do something about this problem of fake news, which isn't new. It's propaganda, it's misinformation, it's disinformation. But at the core of it is this issue of trust or lack thereof. So Chase Palmieri, tell our listeners, how exactly did you come to get involved in what becomes Credder.com?
After earning my degree in entrepreneurship, which was my focus because I wanted to learn that skill set and apply it to some of today's problems, I went, like you said, and was running my family restaurant here in Petaluma, California, where we're speaking today. And I was specifically doing a lot of work with our Yelp business owner's account, and I specifically remember how when Yelp came into the restaurant industry, it completely changed the behaviors of restaurant owners and staff and the waiters and bussers. So it really changed the industry behavior once the customers were able to start leaving reviews and holding local businesses accountable. This was great because it also allowed for a more level playing field so that, for example, restaurant goers didn't have to rely on brand name breakfast spots like Denny's or IHOP, but could actually see an online reputation for a mom and pop restaurant, it very much de-risked people's ability to go check out that restaurant. So I was dealing with this while also being an avid news consumer, which has been kind of a lifelong hobby, now turned career. And I was seeing the rise of clickbait and sensationalism as a percentage of news coverage. It just seemed to be going up and up in online news coverage. And when I started looking into it more, it became very clear that all of the incentives, all of the financial models were pointing in a direction that that sensationalism, that attention-seeking journalism was just going to increase. There didn't seem to be anything to slow it down or reverse. And at the time, the solutions being proposed were, oh, well, you know, Google and Facebook will censor stories on our behalf, no worries. Or there will be an artificial intelligence for news that will come along and tell us what's real and what's fake, what's true, what's false. And both of those solutions were really unsatisfying to me as somebody that grew up reading books like 1984. Outsourcing our critical thinking didn't seem like the solution that I wanted as a news consumer. And so when I started thinking about it more, I guess I was relying on my background with Yelp, and I realized, well, what would it look like if there was a Yelp connecting online news consumers or a Rotten Tomatoes for news? And we started to play with that model, and I ultimately recruited my co-founders, and we moved into a house and grinded away for 2 years to build our platform Creditor for crowd-contested media. And in short, it's a review site for news media.
So the beginning of Creditor actually was manifest in something called Tribeworthy, right? And you spent the better part of a couple years working on that and working on this platform. And so how has that informed your current vision and trajectory, and how has that changed into the new vision under Creditor?
Yeah, Creditor is very much just a continuation or the next iteration of Tribeworthy. It really is just a rebranding on our side before we did this more public launch. We had to start with a name when we first were starting out, and we went with Tribeworthy because you have to call it something. And Tribeworthy was trustworthy as decided by our tribe of users. It made sense to us at the time. Turns out it didn't catch with everybody, but that's to be learned. And we iterated on the brand, and we've really expanded on the product and the functionality and the sleek design. And now we really have something that's ready for public use.
And just to remind listeners, you're wondering how to spell any of these things. A Creditor is Creditor.com. That's correct.
Yep, creditor.com. Yep.
And if people go there now, what will they see?
Depending on when this airs, if you go there right now, as we're talking, you would hit a splash page that would ask you whether you're a journalist or just a normal news consumer. If you mark that you're a journalist, we'll kind of try to rush your sign up and get you verified, because that's what we're focused on this week is onboarding journalists. But in the next couple of weeks, we're going to start letting in normal users. And the reason we're doing that is because, like Rotten Tomatoes, our site has two separate ratings for every article, author, and outlet. There's the critic rating, which is made up of journalist reviewers that we have verified on the site. And then there's the user rating, which is, you know, your fellow news consumer, the public.
This is actually the platform. And again, I was a consultant, still am a consultant with you, was a consultant for Tribeworthy and on critical media literacy and education. Because one of the things that I think is so important about the way that you have devised the platform is that it encourages a degree of news media literacy. So it's not just a website where there's a comment section. It's not just a place where people go off on tangents and just say whatever they want and go back to their confirmation bias. What you're encouraging people to do is actually critically engage in media. And in fact, as far as internet culture goes, a lot of what the sites that you have been involved with is sort of a participation type literacy. How do people participate in digital media? How do they participate with these platforms? And how do they get the most out of these platforms in an educated way? And so participation literacy is a pretty big part, I think, of what you're doing. And in conjunction with critical media literacy, both at Tribeworthy, now at Creditor.com. And so tell our listeners a little bit more about what you find to be the strengths of what you call crowd-contested media.
To your point about the use of critical media literacy on the platform, and obviously a big part of why we wanted to work with you and have you on as a consultant in the early days, is because before we even started to build all the feature sets around this type of review site platform, we spent the first 8 months held up in our house trying to figure out a review process for news, one that could try to get really specific feedback out of the news consumer in about 2 clicks, that would be easy at a glance to prompt the next reader on what to be on the lookout for, also be useful feedback to the author of the article itself. And again, it had to be easy for a first-time user, but using this critical media literacy framework. And so what we came up with was a concept where if you trust the article, you're vouching for it. You hit that you trust the article. But if you don't, we ask, well, why didn't you trust the article? And which of these 4 buckets did your distrust come from? And that is illogical, bias, a mistake, or some other reason that it was not credible. And when you select illogical, for example, we would pull up a list of the most common fallacies that you might find in an article so that, again, in 2 clicks, you could leave something as specific as straw man fallacy as feedback for the author, but also for your next reader of that article. And then we tag that to the URL forever. So yeah, critical media literacy is foundational, literally the foundation of our review platform.
So that's actually heartening in this day and age of so-called fake news. I recently have been teaching a course at Cal State East Bay called Moral Economies of Digital Media, and we focus on social media for part of the course, have looked at Siva Vaidnathan's anti-social media, sort of a takedown on Facebook. We've also been reading the Electronic Frontier Foundation and McSweeney's issue 54, which is called The End of Trust. It's a book-length publication of several hundred pages. And so you recently spoke in class with the students, and as ever, they come up with great questions, great ideas, and get really enthusiastic and excited about what you're doing now at Credder.com, because it really goes to the core of why you created this platform. I also want to remind listeners, if they don't know, that you and the founders of Tribeworthy and Credder, now Credder.com, you're millennials. You're under 30. You're digital natives. You're born into this digital technology. But you discovered that there was a looming crisis, right? And then, of course, it exploded in the last couple years with social media, misinformation, disinformation, so-called fake news. The participatory literacy part, coupled with the critical media literacy part, manifest in crowd-contested media. That's something that seems to go over very well with most demographics. I've seen you speak at conferences, events, and we've tried to plug you into the network of media scholars, media studies scholars, journalists, etc. Describe for us how the reception has been among these different groups.
It really comes back to why we founded this in the first place. What are the alternatives? It's censoring or an AI for news that's going to think on your behalf. And the reason that we wanted to move forward with an approach of crowd-contested media, which again is a phrase that we coined ourselves, so hopefully it catches on. The reason we wanted crowd-contested media is that we thought, well, here is an industry where you have news producers and you have news consumers, and the news producers are no longer serving on the behalf of the news consumers. There is a breakdown in the financial incentives between news producers and news consumers because of the advertiser-based model where clickbait and traffic reign king. And what we wanted to do was flip that on its head and say, well, actually, at Credder, we believe news should compete for trust, not clicks. And we're going to do what we can to celebrate good journalism and drive traffic to articles, authors, and outlets based on the perceived trust of those sources over time, not just based on how clickbaity that headline was when you were scrolling down in your newsfeed. We've been long proponents of crowd-contested media because what's interesting about our approach to this solution is that we actually don't require censorship. So you might notice that all across the headlines, you have Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Google playing this kind of whack-a-mole censorship game. that we at Creditor don't have to fight, because remember, the point of our site is to get articles rated. So we would want the most atrocious article in the world to live on our platform so that it can get rated and be identified as such. So we don't fight the same battles as some of these other platforms that are starting to enter this slippery slope of media censorship.
I'd like to remind listeners, you are tuned to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. I am speaking with Chase Palmieri from Creditor.com. We're talking about the launch of his newest efforts to combat fake news online, but more particularly to build trust in news media sources. We will continue our conversation with Chase Palmieri of Creditor.com after this musical break. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we are interviewing Chase Palmieri of Creditor.com, Creditor.com. We're talking about crowd-contested media. Of course, listeners to the Project Censored Show know that we have worked off and on with Chase Palmieri in several iterations from Tribeworthy to Creditor, and he has been co-hosting the program. And much of the reason that we had Chase invited on to the program to co-host with us is because not only does he offer a millennial demographic and perspective about what's going on in the digital media landscape, but because he also has created with his team at Creditor.com a means by which to build trust in online sources. And as I mentioned before, the Electronic Frontier Foundation McSweeney publication from earlier in the year, you can find it at EFF.org. It's called The End of Trust. And so what we were talking about a little bit before the break was what's significant about that and what can we do about that. So we want to get back into this issue with what Creditor.com is for and what it is trying to do. And what it's trying to do, Chase Palmieri, is you're trying to recreate a way of building trust and community in digital media, in online platforms. And particularly, it's the case that in digital media, we're seeing an epistemological crisis. We're seeing a crisis where people don't know what to trust. They then therefore revert to confirmation bias or some hyperpartisan silo. And then the algorithms that they see in social media kind of guide them to the things that they've already been wanting to see. And so maybe they don't get outside of those filter bubbles. And so there's a lot of challenges we face. And of course, I've got some tough questions for you coming up too, right? About, and you're no stranger to these, about how is the platform being foolproof? But before we do that, how is it that you find the site can build trust and we can believe it? Because part of gaining trust isn't just about having it happen, but it's actually having confidence that there is a real relationship being built, that people won't be waiting for the rug to be yanked out from under them.
Yeah, absolutely. So this kind of gets back to your point about our team being digital natives. What we see when we look at the trust crisis in news today, which hit record levels of distrust across all political spectrums in 2016, according to Gallup polls, it's gotten slightly better, but it's still an abysmal level of trust in news media. And I'm sure that that statement resonates with most of our listeners, especially when looking at our traditional corporate media. What we look at when we see the landscape is that trust is built in aggregate. That is our thesis. And what I mean by that is that when you look at review sites, for example, platforms like Yelp and Rotten Tomatoes and TripAdvisor and Goodreads for books, what you see is a collection of consumers' feedback in a specific industry leaving feedback about a product or service. And all of that combined feedback is then displayed in a way where, at a glance, other consumers in that industry can make trusted, educated decisions. Now, granted, if you see a 5-star restaurant on Yelp, that doesn't guarantee that you're going to have your own 5-star experience when you go there, but it does give you a little bit of trust that, hey, you know, this place is worth trying. It is, again, de-risking your time and your money being spent there. And so that's the way we look at it. Trust is built in aggregate, as in the digital age. And so what Credr does, it never wants to tell you what to trust. We specifically want to be collecting the feedback of the world's news consumers, connecting them in real time when they're landing on articles, when they're looking at authors and outlets, and display to them what other news consumers' feedback on those articles are, why they lost or gained trust in that article and why. And doing it in a transparent way, again, so that Credr ultimately is trusted as an organization as well.
Julia Engwin, who was at ProPublica that now has left and does work in social media and tech sector, she's one of the people interviewed in the End of Trust book. And I just wanted to read something briefly because I think that this is something that you definitely address. And I know we've addressed it on the Project Censored show before. Just a few weeks ago, we had on Nolan Higdon and Ben Boynton, Media Freedom Foundation, and ACME, the Action Coalition for Media Education, that did a great piece that we published on the projectcensored.org site on Has Media Literacy Been Hijacked? So we've been on this case. We've been talking about the outsourcing of trust and how, because Congress and the public has been demanding that actions be taken by the tech sector, we kind of have placed this at the very foot of the institutions or the businesses that maybe have helped create this erosion issue. I don't want to oversimplify it because it involves public education, you know, corporate media in general. But certainly the rise of the big tech sector, algorithms, social media, that's really been part of this conversation. Engwin says, she talks about the end of trust. She says, I don't know if I agree with this end of trust as a frame. She says, quote, I'm more into viewing this as an outsourcing of trust right now. So essentially, I think that in this endless quest for efficiency and control, we've chosen and sometimes to, quote, trust the data over human interactions. We're in this huge debate, for instance, about fake news. We've decided it's all Facebook's problem. They need to determine what is real and what is not. Why did we outsource the trust of all of what's true in the world, all facts, to Facebook or Google, to the news algorithm? It doesn't make any sense. Well, I'm afraid I have to agree with that.
Yeah.
Well, this seems to sound like common sense to us here, but, you know, she goes on to talk about serious issues with artificial intelligence, AI, which you have already mentioned. This is what's going on. We are basically asking them to fix this problem for us.
It really makes no sense. Google is a search engine. Facebook is a place where you can stay connected with your friends. Neither of them really claim to be a media company. So why would we impart that responsibility on them? Now, you might say, well, they helped exacerbate the problem. And that might be true. But that doesn't, by definition, mean that they're therefore the right person to solve it. If anything, we should look at what those problems are. One thing that's interesting about Facebook and even Twitter to a certain extent is that, like you said, you have these silos where you're going to have articles or whatever's in your newsfeed is going to kind of appeal to your own confirmation bias. So one thing that we do differently on Credr is that it's just one site. It's the same site for everybody. Whether you're left, right-leaning, it doesn't matter. You're going to see all the same articles. If an article is gaining traction, you're going to see it. If it's on the homepage, you're going to see it. And anybody can post any article onto the site so that it can be reviewed.
Okay, so you're trying to be upfront, transparent. You actually even have critical media literacy pedagogy as tools built into the platform. You mentioned earlier, you talked about some of the so-called fallacies. Could you run down a list of some things for the listeners? Someone goes to the platform and they rate an article for trustworthiness, and if they trust it, they click it. But if they have some issue with it, or if they don't totally trust it, or there's some problem, it then kicks them into another screen. What exactly does that look like? It's a couple more clicks.
When you trust an article, you're simply vouching for it. You're marking that you trust it, and that will be visible next to your name as the reviewer. But if you don't trust the article, you can't simply downvote it or attack it. You really have to state why. You have to explain yourself, and then you're held accountable for that explanation. And what that looks like is when you don't select trust, we prompt you with those four general problem areas. Well, was something illogical? Was there a bias? Was there a mistake? Or was there, for some other reason, the article was not credible? For example, when you click illogical, you'll see speculation, straw man fallacy, ad hominem attack, these types of commonly used fallacies that are underlying the arguments within many articles we see today. Under biases, you might see religious bias, nationalist bias, political agenda, hit piece, pure opinion. Those are some of the common biases we see. And then in mistake, you have something like factual error, misused term, misused image or video, these kind of things where you're just trying to actually correct the record. And then in the not credible category, if you went down that route, what you might find is things like sensationalism, or this is a surface level piece, meaning it really is not offering much more information than what the headline itself said. So those are examples of commonly found problems within articles. The review process is going to keep iterating. It's going to get better and better. But we are at a point now where a news consumer can, in their very first experience on Creditor, without even a background in media literacy education, can identify a problem and point it out for the next reader. And the reason that's important is because when you look at what we're doing now, like what is the alternative? The alternative is what we do now, which is you read an article, maybe you get two paragraphs through the article, and you find it's very problematic, it's full of bias. What do most readers do? What they do is they move their cursor arrow to the top right corner of the screen and they exit out of that article. And what that means is they've done nothing to hold the article, author, or outlet accountable. And it also means they've done nothing to prepare the next reader for what they might find within the article. And so this comes back to like Rotten Tomatoes. If you're making a decision on what movie to watch on Netflix or go to see in the box office, you might pull up Rotten Tomatoes. It's the same site for everybody. There's no silos on Rotten Tomatoes. You see all the ratings there for whatever the movies of the day are. And you can see what other consumers think. And it's the same thing on Creditor. Before you even read an article, you can know what journalists are saying about it. You can know what your fellow news consumers are saying about it. And you can know what problems to be on the lookout for. And then it's up to you whether you think the article is worth your time to go ahead and read.
So late last year, there was an article published in New York Magazine. The article was by Max Reed. How much of the internet is fake? Turns out a lot of it. Actually, that's the title of the article at New York Magazine. And the article goes on to talk about the problem with the internet, per se, isn't that it doesn't house any truths. It's that it has a dearth of trust. So we're back to that concept. And in this article, it gets into detail about how many things online are not real or are not what they appear to be. And this even uses Justice Department documents, cases of fraud, people who are using fake websites, empty websites designed for bot traffic, bilking advertisers for $36 million, pretty high levels of fraud. Talks about how bots are used to fake clicks, mouse movements, and social network login information so that they can masquerade as engaged human consumers. Fake people with fake cookies and fake social media accounts, fake moving their fake cursor, fake clicking on fake websites. The fraudsters had essentially created simulacrum, going back to Baudrillard and Derrida, of the internet, where the only things real were the ads. I mean, this is an egregious case, but underlying all of this, Reed says that what's gone from the internet, after all, isn't truth but trust, the sense that the people and things we encounter are what they represent themselves to be. Even metrics have been shown, and Facebook has had to publicly admit that they can't even read some of their own metrics properly and that they're wildly exaggerated or inaccurate. So given this, and given that you are on a digital media platform, how do you see Creditor not just going after the idea of building trust in news sources, but how do you see the overall mission relating to this broad epistemic crisis?
On Creditor, we're about trying to get you to verified identity as fast as possible. So unlike Twitter or some other sites where you can have parody accounts or just create multiple accounts, on Creditor, you have one account and we try to get you to verify your identity. And we do that with what we call the trust ladder. So for example, step one of the trust ladder would be verifying your email address. Fair enough. Everybody does that for sites. Very common today. Step two is a little bit more. It's where we send a 4-digit code to your phone number, and then you enter that code back into the site. Okay, now you've gone ahead to rung two of the ladder and verified your phone number. That already cuts down on a lot of this kind of bot and trollish behavior because it's a lot harder to get multiple phone numbers. But granted, it's still something that people can do. And that's why we have our third rung of the ladder, which is when we send a postcard to your home address. And again, this is all optional. You opt into it. We're not guessing your home address. You tell us, and then we send you a postcard. It has that 4-digit code, and you would plug it back into the site. And now you've taken all the steps possible to verify your identity with us. And we display that kind of badge of verification next to your reviews so that when people are looking at the site, they don't have to wonder, why should I trust the reviewers themselves? The reason why is, A, we show you the rating, the track record of their reviews, because when you leave a review, you have to explain it, and then that gets up and down voted by other users on the site. And so the reviewers themselves are being held accountable, but then we also display this kind of badge of how verified they are in regards to their personal identity.
So we're speaking with CEO of Creditor.com, Chase Palmieri. Again, listeners will also recognize Chase as the co-host of our program here. Today, we flipped the table and the mic, and we're talking about one of the projects that Chase has been working on for several years. And it's actually how we cross paths with Chase Palmieri at Project Censored because of our deep interest and commitment to critical media literacy education, and also how that extends online to digital media in terms of participation literacy. We'll continue our conversation about crowd-contested media, and the issue that we just left off on was building the trust ladder. So we'll continue there when we get back after this musical break. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we are speaking with Chase Palmieri of Creditor.com, formerly Tribeworthy.com. And Chase and his team have relaunched, rebranded. In fact, it's going to be launching at the end of May.
May 27th is our goal.
So it is not technically up and ready for everyday viewers and users right now. But you do have a period now where you are hoping to welcome, and you have invited several hundred and have several hundred people that are journalists that are coming into the site?
We've got about 400 journalists on the platform, and we've got a wait list of, you know, your average news consumer that's up in the thousands now. And we're going to start letting in batches, but our real public launch, when anybody can hit the site and see everything for the first time, will be May 27th.
So listeners can certainly bookmark that. And if you have any interest or questions about it, before we jump back into our conversation, the website is Creditor.com. And Chase, could you share an email or a way to get in touch with you if listeners have questions or want to get involved?
My email, my personal email, is chase@creditor.com. Again, with the two D's, Creditor.com. And please reach out, because it's the feedback that has helped us iterate the platform over these 3 years.
This has been plugged in, your various concepts that have been evolving over the last few years. We at Project Censored have run those through some of the people that we work with at the Union for Democratic Communications, at Action Coalition for Media Education, Project Censored Summits. This is a great educational tool. And so that's why a lot of us that are educators have been really excited to share it in our networks for class assignments, right, to really build this both inside and outside of the classroom, which is actually what's fantastic about the platform, is that it's not something that's only for formal education or classroom use. It's for general societal purposes to build trust in news sources.
It's media literacy, but in people's hands, in real time, usable as a tool. It's like social news gathering as a service.
The internet clearly was lacking that, and we were just talking about an end of trust or a dearth of trust and some of the challenges we face in the internet age and with digital media. But before the break, we were also talking about what you called a trust ladder, where you have three stages of people that if they want to get involved, they can volunteer that information, and then you can verify who they are, and they are who they say they are. I have a question. If someone does not go through the trust ladder, can they still perform on the platform?
Yeah. The way we look at it is there's two ways that you can have weight of your review. The first is just a track record over time of people that are upvoting your reviews, therefore saying that they're finding your reviews helpful. And the other way is to really go the distance and verify you're a real person, and not just that you're a real person, but you're John so-and-so, the real person. So the way we do that, and this is all very transparent, you can see it on the site, but basically those two factors weigh into your review's weight. The rating that you have and the track record you have as being a helpful reviewer, and how far you've gone to verify your identity. So the most weight you would have as a reviewer would be a user with 100% rating on the platform and has gone all the way and verified their home address. But we have it flexible like that so that if somebody wanted to remain anonymous, for example, but they have a track record of being a great reviewer, then they still have weight. Or maybe there's somebody that has a track record of not being a very thoughtful reviewer, but they went ahead and went and verified their identity. So it's really a combination there, and it's all very easily visible at a glance when you're looking at the reviews.
So you've had a prototype of this, and you've had some people interacting with the technologies that you've been developing for several years, even before Kreder. What has been your experience in terms of the average users? Key questions, challenges. What are some things that you had to overcome in your earlier days doing this that you think that you are working toward perfecting what you're going to launch on May 27?
One of the first big lessons we learned is that your average news consumer wants to be able to take this service with them on the go. They didn't want to have to come back to Kreder.com every time to search an article that they were planning on reading. They didn't want to have to use it as their starting page for news. Long term, we'd love that. But what they were asking for was essentially a browser extension. And this is another one of the products that we have available for our users, is you would come to the site, you would download a browser extension once. And what that means is now anytime you're going through Facebook or Twitter and you find an article and you land on that article, we would do a quick search of that article in our database. We would pop up the rating information of that article for you right when you land on it. You'd never have to come back to Kreder again. You can just go about your news gathering and still see all of your fellow news consumers' feedback on an article. And then when you're done reading that article and we see that you got to the bottom of that article, we would prompt you to review it. So we really want to make this as easy as possible. And if you think about it, platforms like Yelp and Rotten Tomatoes, it's really only about 1% of their user base that's leaving the reviews. And that's because it's an offline experience that then comes online to be reviewed. You know, you go to a restaurant and then you come home and you pull up your computer to review it. Or you go see a movie and then you pull up your computer to review it. What we're doing is we're really trying to integrate the review process right into the moment you're reading that article.
That's actually what makes it more intuitive. When people are online and reading, you're going to have something right there that you can just simply click on.
Yeah. It pops up on its own when you land on the article to show you the rating information. And then when you get to the bottom of the article, it'll slide back out again and ask you to review it. And you just a couple clicks and you've left your feedback.
So we've been talking, Chase Palmieri, we've been talking about sort of what has impelled you to do this, right, in building crowd-contested media and building trust in sources. Our eroding confidence in institutions in the United States is actually at fairly historic levels. And again, citing the material from EFF at the end of Trust, they have a series of graphs in here that go over the last 40 years. And every single one of them, whether they're looking at the public's general attitude or level of confidence in organized religion, is down. This goes back to the early 1970s up to 2018, going from 60 to 70% in the early 70s all the way down to around 30%. Trust in the Supreme Court is from a high in the 1980s of a little over 50%, now down to 30%. Congress, under 10%. Although in the 80s, Congress was over 35% generally, right? And this is an aggregate of a bunch of Gallup polls. Newspapers have gone from 40 years ago to being upwards of 50% degrees of public confidence to now close to 20. You're going to see the same kind of figures with banking, TV news. So again, what we're talking about is a decay in confidence and a decay in trust in these public-serving institutions. And it is oft because then these institutions have been captured or enclosed by private and corporate interests so that they are functioning more for profit than for public interest. So why should the listeners trust you? Why is Kreder going to be different than the other for-profit models where we have seen corporations come and enclose them and then gradually drive them down to work against the public interest?
That's a good question, and it's something we get a lot. especially because our target market of users is really, you know, your most skeptical news consumer. So the people we deal with every day and want on the platform are the people that first have to question Credr and what it's all about before they buy into it. What I would say to that is that everything done on the platform is very visible and transparent. So, for example, when you look at a rating for an article, you could very easily scroll down and calculate that rating percentage on your own by looking at the reviews. So, for example, there's 4 reviews, 2 of them are negative. That's a 50% rated article, and you just scroll down, find those 2 negative reviews, read it for yourself. So everything about the ratings is right there out in the open. Credr really doesn't ever want to tell you what to trust. But really, we are built with this mission to improve the lives of news consumers and to help repair the somewhat broken relationship between the news producers and the news consumers. So yes, we are for profit. We believe that there is a way that we can be sustainable and have a business model in this, and we can maybe dive into that, or I'm sure we will. But we are of the belief that we're going to do a lot more good at a much bigger scale if we can find a way that this works in people's financial interests.
And again, we're coming at this with an issue of not just addressing the fact that we are in a society of declining confidence or declining trust. We're also very much looking at this as a way of building, rebuilding trust, right? Yeah. Ethan Zuckerman, who wrote a piece in The End of Trust called The Economics of Mistrust, has a really interesting quote, talks specifically about social media, digital media. He said, Facebook, he, quote, may not deserve our trust, nor may the U.S. government, but to respond with nihilism is to exit the playing field and cede the game to those who exploit mistrust. We need to harness our mistrust to use it as fuel. Zuckerman says, this means forsaking the expensive fantasy of a trustless world and doing the hard work of building new systems that deserve our trust. And it sounds to me like that is the trajectory and the mission long term of where you would see Credr.
Yeah, absolutely. We're here to address the trust crisis. If you land on our page, we call ourselves the trusted review site for news media. And that's a little bit of a play on words, because when you're reviewing things, you're stating whether or not you trust it. So yeah, we're that's what we're here to do, is we're here to visibly display what your fellow news consumer trusts or distrusts and why. And it's our job to make that value-adding experience for all the world's news consumers.
You're tuned to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. We'll continue our conversation with Chase Palmieri about Credr.com and crowd-contested media after this musical break. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we are talking about crowd-contested media, critical media literacy, and the forthcoming launch of a new website called Credr.com, Credder.com. We're here talking to Chase Palmieri, who also, one of the hats he wears, is often co-host of the program. And we want to talk about what Chase has been working on for the last several years. Of course, this is a big part of how Chase has crossed paths with us at Project Censored, is that we are concerned about the epistemological crisis we face. We are concerned about the spreading of propaganda and mis- and disinformation. And we are very interested in helping build public trust where it belongs in the news media. There are plenty of journalists and news media and independent sources that really deserve our attention and I think have earned the trust of many readers. But often we have a hard time talking about that and we have a hard time agreeing on that. And what Chase Palmieri and his team at Credr.com are doing is they're building a transparent platform online where you can see in real time how trust can be built and maintained in news sources. So, Chase Palmieri, let's bring up a couple of the other challenges. And again, I know that you're familiar with some of these questions, but how does the site deal with political leanings or extreme articles?
Like we mentioned earlier, we want every article, no matter how good or how poorly written, to be on the platform so that it can get rated. Again, a problem that Facebook and Twitter and those guys are fighting the slippery slope censorship game, and a battle that we don't have to fight. What we found when we were launched originally as Tribeworthy, and we had a few thousand users on the site, whenever a political leaning article entered the site, this is kind of what happened. If an article had a visible left lean to it, there would be right-wing users that would point that out to the next readers and therefore downvoting the article. If there was a right-leaning article, the left would sniff it out and point that out to their readers and downvote the article. And so what we were finding, though, and this is really the goal and what we were looking to see if this would happen, is the articles that were written on the exact same topics but that didn't have a visible political leaning, those were the articles that skated by without being touched by either political leaning of the reviewers themselves. And those were the articles that both sides could agree was a what we call a top article.
Let's take, for example, how this is used in a very educational setting. The site might also be able then to model to early stage journalism students, where they can start to see what is clearly an op-ed, what is a straight news story. How do you build credibility by reporting a news story? What are some things you do and don't do? In other words, it can be a pretty didactic site, given that you're going to have several hundred journalists just to start and build even more in this capacity.
Yeah, it's going to show the do's and don'ts of journalism and building a trusted audience. It's going to be very easy to see where somebody lost the trust of their audience. And if you're the author yourself, what we're building for authors and outlets is this kind of, you might think about it as a Yelp business owner account. It's the portal that they have on the other side where they're receiving all of these reviews in real time. And they have a line graph, if you will, that shows how they're performing in regards to audience trust over time, how they're performing based on different topics, how each article's performing. And then you can imagine how useful this would be to an outlet to be able to look at all their individual authors and see, okay, instead of just looking at the traffic metrics that they're looking at today, now let's go look and see which of our authors are actually building trust under our outlet's name. And how do we make sure that that's taken seriously now that we can measure it for the first time?
What about this Predator.com then being used? We live in a day and age where we hear the monikers of fake news often, and we have a president that talks about how the press is the enemy of the people. Is Predator something that's trying to be hostile to journalists or attack journalists, and the platform work that way, or is that something that's antithetical to the mission?
We're really trying to repair the relationship between those news producers and the news consumers. The review process itself, it forces an explanation of your review. So again, it's not just like you can purely go around attacking. We also don't let users review authors or outlets directly. You have to review the individual pieces of content and again, explain what is wrong or right about it. So no, we see ourselves as being the resource that can actually help these journalists know where they're building or losing their audience's trust.
And so what's the incentive for a journalist to sign up at Credder.com in terms of issues of branding or reputation? What are your views on that? How are you sort of trying to entice people to the platform in that regard? I mean, let's say somebody already writes at the New York Times or Newsweek, or you know, was lucky enough to have a decent paying job in journalism. And of course, at Project Censored, we certainly criticize corporate journalism and some of the conflicts of interest there. But how do you invite people in that? What's the selling point?
One of the big things that we focus on is building the incentives for the journalists to participate in the platform, to come claim their page and to review articles under the critic category. And one of the ways we're doing that is by featuring their Twitter handles next to all of their reviews. So as anybody could imagine, journalists care a lot about their Twitter following count and having active news consumers that make up that follower count, because really what that gets to is their ability to have reach and distribution when they come out with a new article or when they have something to say about the media landscape. And so the way we are incentivizing them today is through that Twitter following count being a great place off of Twitter to drive up new really active news consumers into your followers. But ultimately, what we'll get into is our revenue model, which is allowing users to tip the authors and outlets. And it's our job to try to turn that into a monthly recurring tip on their behalf so that ultimately we become like a Patreon for news, a kind of monthly recurring donation to the authors and outlets that you want to support.
So people that go to the site to use the site, then they can also financially support the journalists that they believe are the most trustworthy based on their performance on the site.
Yeah. Anybody that you want to support, you can support. And again, back to the incentive of why should anybody review in the first place, we also allow tipping to the reviewers themselves.
So reviewers can get tipping. So there is some financial potential.
What we would love to do is have your average news consumers that are really savvy media literacy folks reviewing articles, getting paid for their thoughtful reviews, and maybe even making a living just out of critiquing articles and kind of working on behalf of their fellow news consumers, and to turn that into a day job.
A lot of the things that you're describing sound pretty ideal in the way of building a more trustworthy system, this crowd-contested media. But the question I have for you goes back to bots, trolls, troll farms. Of course, the United States news media has been just glued to the Mueller report and Russia everywhere, and the Internet Research Agency and Facebook ads that Russia allegedly takes out, and these kinds of things. The point here isn't just Russia. It's that there's all kinds of potentially insidious and nefarious forces that can build these troll farms, or not even algorithmically, but they could actually hire people. How do you see the platform dealing with the kind of attacks that could come in from special interests on the platform to put the thumb on the scale of things that they like, or to a really concentrated campaign against some of the articles and sources they don't like?
I guess I'll preface this answer with there's no one-size-fits-all solution. Otherwise, all the platforms that we see dealing with these issues with their infinite budgets would have already solved it. But we do have a few ways that we are uniquely addressing it, and they combine to a pretty powerful solution. So for example, our review process itself, it's very contextual. You're explaining what problem you found within a specific piece of content. So it's not something that you could just train a bot to go around and saying the same thing on every single article, because it just wouldn't even make sense when other reviewers are looking at the review on that article, and therefore it would get downvoted and lose its weighting as a reviewer. So that's one way. And again, we also are really trying to drive users to verify as much of their identity as possible so that we're not dealing with bots. It's a separate question to deal with trolls. These are real human beings that maybe you're just really enjoy trying to mess with the system. And we have a few ways that we're dealing with them. Again, we have the user rating, which goes into their weight. How much of good actors are they? How helpful are all of their previous reviews? And the weight is really only generated when you can display that over time. The other thing that we're doing is we're monitoring when large groups of people enter the site. Specifically, if a large group of people all came in to downvote a single article, that really raises a red flag in our system, because it seems to us that maybe somebody in a Reddit channel or something posted an article and said, hey, let's all go sign up and attack this article. And so what we're playing with is things like not allowing users to review articles in their first couple sessions, things like that. We have the tools in place where we can see if a group of people come in a way that is not normal for how users normally approach our platform.
So that's all pretty interesting. And again, it's been a few years you've been working on this and working out the bugs. It's going to launch again in this new form as Spreader.com, new company, new startup, some of the same team members.
One last point to that would be, though, that if you don't trust the user category, let's assume that you think that it's riddled with bots and trolls. Well, that's why we have the journalist category as well. You can lean on that if that's what you'd like. Those are all verified journalists reviewing articles.
So the last thing I want to bring up is something that you and I have talked about, and we've had guests on the program discussing this very issue, is that because of this decline in trust and because of people's concerns for so-called fake news and propaganda, whether or not it's coming from Russia or from CBS, disinformation, misinformation, decay in the integrity of information veracity is a real problem for a society like the United States. Some of the fixes have been to go to those tech companies and say, well, you helped exacerbate this, or you helped create this. like we mentioned before. So we need to figure out what to do. And of course, some of the social media companies outsourced critical thinking and outsourced fact checking. So that's kind of like outsourcing trust, right, in a lot of ways. And we probably don't want to do that. There's been legislation. There's been some focus on media literacy. But of course, as we've talked about here in the program, that's also something that's been hijacked by corporate interests. One of the other things that we brought up on a show was this group called NewsGuard that actually turns out more to be the old guard. Take a look at who's behind NewsGuard, people from the military-industrial complex, tech sector, corporate media outlets, etc. They're trying to create a sphere of legitimacy around mainstream establishment sites, right, as they use those kinds of terms.
Yep, with no consumer feedback involved.
Right. So talk about that again, and talk about again how you think Kreder is a different way of going about building news trust. NewsGuard seems to be top down, but Kreder is bottom up.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's the key difference. I mean, besides diving in and trying to read the intentions of some of the characters involved in NewsGuard and who they proudly tout as their advisory board, getting all of that aside, they really are a top-down approach. They hire a small group of journalists, and they look at a few outlets, and they determine a red, yellow, or green rating for the outlet. It's not very nuanced. It has nothing to do with an by-author basis, let alone a by-article basis. It really is just a black, white, gray list for outlets.
Anything at this site is good. Anything at this site is bad.
Very oversimplified. We believe in a bottom-up approach where there's consumer participation because, again, what we're trying to solve is the trust problem. And we're of the belief that no consumers are going to trust a solution that doesn't allow them to participate.
So Chase Palmieri, the site is Kreder.com, CREDDER.com, launching May 27. Listeners, of course, can check out the archive of this show if you want to come back and take another listen to the show. Also, Chase Palmieri, please give your email address one more time.
It's chase@Kreder, CREDDER.com. Feedback's welcome. If you find a little bug in the site, let me know. We'll get that fixed. We're going to keep iterating our way to a solution that news consumers can use and trust.
So Chase Palmieri, thanks so much for sharing with our listeners everything that you've been doing here for the last several years.
Thanks, Mickey.
Supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, cause they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign. That's why you hear the same old things they claim, but change never came. It's a dirty game maintained by rain for capital.
You're tuned to The Project Censored Show, established in 2010 by myself and Peter Phillips. I'm executive producer and host of the program. Our co-host is Chase Palmieri. Anthony Fest is our senior producer. Our associate producer is Dennis Murphy. The Project Censored Show airs on roughly 50 stations around the United States, from Maui to New York. To learn more about our work or to find any of our previous archive programs, go to projectcensored.org. Please follow and like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and be sure to subscribe to the official Project Censored Show on your cell phones, podcast, and applications. Feel free to share your feedback about our work. You can contact us through projectcensored.org. Last but not least, thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in. And please don't forget to support your local community radio station where you may be tuning in to the Project Censored Show. We'll see you next time. Apocalypse, got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burn bright with waves full of poison. Genocide, wars, far for little poison. The weapons manufactured paid for by attacks upon the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons, build the capacity, citizens. Hypnotized by the master thief, combine, conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential. If you ain't at the table, then you're probably on the menu. We got that love, we flip the brothers in our